This is Golf Nuts with Aaron Abrams and Jimmy James.
Welcome to another episode of Golf Nuts with Aaron Abrams and Jimmy James, where we talk to people who are as fanatical about the game as Aaron and I are, that we have met throughout our golf adventures and travels. Today, we have joining us Jim Smith. Jim is the COO, or Chief Operating Officer, and Director of Golf at the Philadelphia Cricket Club, my home club in the Philly area. So, Aaron, you know, a lot of people don't really understand what the full role of the golf pro is. And they see them, they interact with them, but I'm not sure we all really understand what all that means to be a golf pro at a club and how you go through the process of getting there. So I'm looking forward to talking to Jim about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, maybe only you and I would find this to be an interesting topic, but I do find this to be an interesting topic. I'm curious about this topic. I don't really understand. And even when I'm at a club where they do a search for a pro, you know, I'm always like, well, what are we looking for? You know, what is it that we really want in this position? And it, you know, I just don't know what the clear vision is of that. What's possible, what's probable, and so forth. So I look forward to speaking with you. I have sort of a housekeeping question for you, which is, I haven't played Philly Cricket Club. You've been generous to invite me down. I just haven't been able to do it yet. But is it two clubs? Is it two courses? Because that I feel like makes when it's a club that has 36 holes, I think the dynamic of the pro changes too.
So we have actually two and a half courses. We have Wissahickon, which is a classic Tillinghast course. We have a more modern course, Militia Hill, and then we have a nine-hole course at a separate location. So we have a total of 45 holes. And of course, when a club has multiple locations with different clubhouses and pro shops, there's usually a head pro at each of those pro shops, and then a director of golf, I think, over those in each shop. While they may interact and be interchangeable, each, if they have different clubs for the courses, each different clubhouses or pro shops for the club, each has its own staff, I think. But we can ask Jim. It's one Absolutely. Of those places that's got multiple courses.
Okay, got it. All right. That's good to know. I just want to quickly thank this season's sponsor of Golf Nuts, which is Arcos Caddy App. For those of you guys who haven't tried it yet, it's pretty nifty. You're going to see it more and more and more in your buddies' golf bags. But Arcos helps you figure out how to play your own game, how far you're actually hitting your own course, your own clubs. You got to use it for a few rounds for the sort of AI to sort itself out and figure out your game. But it is pretty amazing once it starts to snap into place and we're all sort of playing this repeated game of golf, even if we feel somewhat inconsistent, there really is a consistency to how far you hit a six iron and so forth. If you're interested in giving Arcos a try and you don't have it yet, get on the arcosgolf.com website. And if you type in golf nuts, GOLFNUTS at the checkout, you'll get 15% off your order. Anyway, with that, why don't we bring on Jim?
Let's bring him into the discussion, and looking forward to it. As usual, should be a lot of fun. We've brought Jim into the discussion, Jim Smith. Jim is the COO and the Director of Golf at the Philadelphia Cricket Club. So we'll start off, Jim, before we get to your background, just what does that title actually mean?
It means my fingers are in a lot of different things, maybe more so than a traditional golf pro. I started as the director of golf, just dealing with golf stuff, and the COO title brings with it involvement in things like food and beverage and membership and strategy and, more phone calls with concerns being expressed, I guess, than just as the golf professional.
Okay. So, Jim, you and I met when I first came to the cricket club, I guess about a year and a half ago as a guest to play, and I immediately fell in love with the place. The course itself, just the clubhouse, the historic nature of it. It's a great place. Was just a great place to be. I fell in love with it so much I decided to join, of course. But can you give us a sense of how you got started in this game? Because I think you went to school as a business or finance major. How did you go from business finance sort of into the world of golf?
Well, I was in high school, a friend and I started a painting business when we were seniors in high school that was very successful. And we did that through college. And my dad, when I was a kid, would take me to hit balls, but I never really got to play a lot of golf. And then I kind of got the bug my freshman year in college, and my business and my partner, who was also a golfer, we got the business to the point where we would go in the morning, we'd tell everybody what to do, we'd go play golf all day and then come back at the end of the day and check on them. And after doing that for a couple summers, golf just sort of took over my life as, something that was fun, competitive, challenging, all the things that, maybe high school sports represent. And when I went to college, I ended up with a degree in finance and economics, and I graduated, and my wife, my now wife, who I was living with at the time, had a good job. So I wasn't in any rush to earn a great living. I took a sales job for 6 months and hated it. Absolutely hated it.
What were you selling?
And I came home. I was selling security systems. So I was selling closed circuit television systems. I would go into a store in West Philadelphia and try to convince, what was clearly a struggling business owner to spend $300 a month to put a camera up so that they didn't get shot. I mean, it was bad. And I just did not like it. And I was soul searching, and my wife said, well, why don't you do something that you love? What do you love? And I was like, I love golf. And, to this day, I still share this story. I was out on my other job and I drove by Commonwealth National, and Kerry Mattern at the time was the pro. I pulled in, he didn't know me from Adam. And I went into the golf shop and I said, can you tell me what I need to do to get into the golf business? And he dropped everything, took me into the locker room and spent an hour with me talking me through what it takes to become a golf pro. And I was like, well, if every golf pro is as cool as this guy, like what a great industry. So he gave me all the steps. And then so I decided, you know what? I gave up the sales job. I landed an assistant's position at Riverton Country Club over in Cinnaminson, New Jersey. And then I've had three or four times where I've been like in the right place at the right time. Just super lucky. And that's why I'm where I am today.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. I mean, that narrative sort of holds true for every industry, for me and Jimmy, sort of, just hanging around the hoop at the right time and the right place and, letting the world come to you to some degree. I'm curious. I was saying to Jimmy before you got on, we were just sort of chatting and one thing I don't really understand, and I'm a golf nut and I play golf all the time, obviously, as someone who does this podcast, I just don't really get what it is that the pro is supposed to do. And I actually wonder if pros themselves are kind of conflicted by that. Some members want you to be teaching. Some members want you to be, on the first tee, welcoming the guests. Some want you playing in, competitive events, like trying to get into the PGA Championship. I mean, what is it that a pro does?
Wow. I think a lot of it depends on the club you're at. you know, depending on what they want. If from my perspective, I'm at a club, you know, that's pretty big, pretty active. Guys that are in the roles, in a role like what I have, I basically tell people I do two things. The first thing is I make sure the right people are in the right places doing the right things at the right times. That's my number one job. And the only way that works is to hire good people and make them happy. And I know I'm oversimplifying it, but my belief is if I can surround myself with really good people and I focus on making sure that they're getting what they want out of the job and that they're happy coming to work every day and that I'm organized and systems oriented enough so that they know what to do each day, which is that making sure the right people, right place, right thing, right time, everything else takes care of itself. And that's kind of what happens at cricket. So, you know, Jimmy will tell you, have you been to cricket? Have you played it, Aaron?
You know, it's funny. I've played so much golf. I went to a wedding at cricket, but I have not played golf there.
But that's going to change. That's going to change.
But that will change.
He's going to come down and play.
Jimmy hasn't been spending as much time in Philly as he will be. And so in the future, I will be there more often.
Good. Well, when you come, like one of the things you'll find is you'll meet a group of my guys who run outside services. Their job is the meet, the greet. Everything's taken care of. This is where the driving range is, locker room. Let me get you a cup of coffee, whatever it is. They're just there to take care of people. You come into the golf shop and the golf professional staff in the shop are the guys that take care of running the shop, running tournaments, dealing with member requests. We have a totally separate team of teaching professionals. All they do is teach. So I'm at a facility where we can kind of have people that specialize in each area of delivering that experience. You know, but if you go to a really small club, with not a lot of staff, then the golf professional wears more hats. And, so it's really what we do, I think, is a function of the type of club that we're at, what's most important to that club and what the resources are at that club.
So you're in your office now, Jim, and based upon my experience over the course of the next 40 minutes, while you're talking to us on this podcast, is probably the longest you'll be in your office. Right. You're when I'm at the club, you're out and about, you're meeting people, you're greeting people, you're mixing it up with them, you're interacting and just having an overall effect on just the whole experience of being at the Philly Cricket Club, which I think is great. Aaron and I were also talking earlier about when you have a club like the Philly Cricket Club, where you have multiple courses in multiple locations with their own sort of pro shop and clubhouse. It's a much bigger role for the director of golf, of course, but sort of how the division of labor sort of works in those circumstances versus just a club with one location, one course.
There's certainly there's economies of scale, you know, when you're at a one location. And many clubs that have multiple golf courses are serviced out of one location. So you sort of get the economies of scale. In our case, with three different courses, three different golf shops, three different parking lots, you know, the bottom line is your staff has to be a little bit bigger to make sure you've got the right bodies in the right places. But one of the things that we do is we want the experience at the nine-hole St. Martin's course to feel just like the experience at the top 100 Wissahickon course. So we have all of the service standards, all of the procedures, all the systems that we utilize, they're the same at each location. And as much as we can, we try to rotate people into each location because, you know this from being here, but there are some people who might have a bias towards Wissahickon and don't play Militia a lot and vice versa. And if you're only staffed Militia Hill with a certain group of guys and Militia with a certain group of guys, those members never cross paths with the full staff. So we have to kind of rotate our staff through to make sure that they get to know everybody. But it's a lot of moving parts, but it's really not overly complicated if you just think through the experience. You know, somebody gave me advice my first year, which was pretend you're me arriving into the parking lot and walk through what the experience should feel like from the minute you arrive in the lot to the minute you leave, and then manage to what you think that experience should be. And then over time, you'll gradually modify that. But that's the whole basis for what we do is we just think about when Aaron shows up for the first time here to play golf, I want to make sure that our systems make sure that he has a great day. And our guys, thankfully, have all bought into the idea that this might sound, I don't know what the right word would be, but everybody that works in our team understands that if they deliver the best experience possible for every time, members and guests, they benefit from that. Meaning, if they're part of a world-class experience, they're going to get an opportunity maybe to make more money or have be recognized or broaden their network or use this as a springboard to another job. So basically what everybody buys into is the idea that their resume is what we do every day and the consistency with which we do it. Because when the time comes for this to move, to provide a benefit for them somewhere else, it's kind of what they've done every day. It's, you know, you, when you go somewhere right now and cricket comes up, you probably say nice things. I benefit from that.
I certainly do, because there's just so many nice and wonderful things to say about cricket that I'm always talking up cricket.
Well, I find that I think like those kind of simple swing thoughts are good for golf and as well for business, like where you just keep it simple. And I think that if a new golf pro or assistant golf pro is listening, and I mean that advice of trying to manage through the experience from, you know, minute one through minute 30 at the club is really, really important. I think for my sensibility in that, you know, pre round to like the first tee, it's awesome when you have the chance to meet the pro for me, yep. You know, and I think of like, you know, the experience I had at Augusta where, you know, when you go out on the tee, I think the experience for most of these guys is there's a pro or two that's out there on the first tee, you know, saying hi to you. And, yep. You know, obviously they have an odd, you know, staff to golfer ratio there that doesn't make it possible for everyone. But, you know, I think that happened to me at Shinnecock where the pro was out at the range and the member introduced me because he knows I'm such a nerd about golf and things like that. But the problem is you have to balance that. Well, I don't know if that's something that everyone wants. So I certainly something I want, but then you're just basically a maitre d'. So, you know, cause you have other stuff to be doing, you're teaching and everything. Where I find this, the problem or as a consumer of golf with the golf pro is if you're drawn too much to the lesson tee, you're not there. No one sees you. You don't engage. And then if you engage entirely, then the folks who want your skills as a teacher are sort of upset. You're going to piss someone off somewhere, but how do you coach your staff on that sort of, you know, being present, being in the moment, and giving everyone the right experience and the time of day, but also all your responsibilities to actually make the factory run on time?
Well, I mean, it's a great question. I mean, I'd say a couple things. One is I haven't been paid for a lesson in 15 years at the club because we have 6 full-time instructors, because I recognized early on that if I was on the lesson tee, I'm doing great, you know, financially and otherwise, but that's not the highest and best use of my time. So part of it is understanding the operation and getting the leadership to buy in and trust that the structure that you're going to create is going to deliver the best experience. If that means a separate teaching staff, a separate outside services staff, what have you. In terms of balancing, like getting all my work done with being visible, I come in every day. Like a late day for me is 5:30 in the morning. Oftentimes I'm at my desk at 5 in the morning because I can get done from 5 to 7:30 in that 2.5 hour range. I can get 7 or 8 hours of work done because I'm not being interrupted. And then by coming in that early and doing that, it frees me up to not have to be at my desk and doing paperwork all day. So I can bop in and out. You know, Jimmy, oftentimes I remember when I met, he brought his beautiful wife in here to do some shopping, which I appreciated very much. But where I really get to spend most of my time is up on our patio. We have a beautiful patio that overlooks 1 and 18, and almost everybody that plays golf spends time on the patio getting something to eat. So a lot of times when I bop out of here, I can get up on the patio and literally touch 50, 60, 70 people in 30 minutes. And that, you know, to your point, that's a big piece of the experience here, right? Which is, I'm just a normal guy who got lucky to get a really good position, but I'm a people person. I want to meet everybody. I want them to feel at home. We've all gotten to go to great clubs, and we don't need to name names, but we've been to the places where you feel like you're walking on eggshells. Like, they make you feel like you're lucky to be on the property, and you just feel like, what rule am I going to break? It's not warm, right? The golf course might be awesome, but the feeling isn't right. Here, it's like, we've got a phenomenal golf facility, but like, I want people walking away going, holy cow, those people are really nice, like really cool.
And well, and the way that happens, you what? Oh, sorry. I wanted to ask like just a quick follow up, because I think it's different when you have the operations that Philly Cricket has, but most clubs are 18 holes, you know, one set of 18 holes. They just don't have the number of members and rounds to bifurcate the teaching role and the pro role. Right. I know Baltusrol also has like two sets of pros, and that makes the experience there phenomenal. But like most clubs are just one. So like for your colleagues who are at one, you know, and they've got both hats to wear, how do you advise them on those sorts of things?
I'll tell you what I've told some seminars, and it doesn't make me right. It just makes my opinion. Every club, regardless of their size, should have a separate instruction team. And the reason why most clubs don't is because the club is short-sighted in the sense that they don't pay the professional staff enough money in non-lesson ways for those people to make a living. So that means that the professionals now are forced to go give lessons, not to provide a great experience, but to put food on their table or save some money. And you can't have a great instruction program if the instructors are coming out of the shop because they've got too many other things that they've got to deal with. Sooner or later, something breaks down. Whereas if a club says, you know what, instead of paying the golf professional $800 a week, I'm going to pay him $1,000 a week so that he doesn't have to give lessons. Every pro in America, if they advertised, we want a teaching pro and we're not going to pay you any money, you eat what you kill, you'd have 50 resumes for every opening, because everybody wants to teach golf and set their own schedule. So to me, that is a structural problem that many clubs really should look at, because, you know, it's easy to say this today. Pre-COVID, when clubs were looking for successes and more people to play golf, think about this. People play more golf if they play better, period. Right? So if you have a great instruction program and you're getting people to play better and they get more excited, that's good for the club. They'll play more rounds of golf. They'll pay more cart fees, guest fees, food. But again, 8 out of 10 clubs look at the instruction of members as simply, well, that's a way for the professional staff to make some extra money. And that's the wrong way to look at it.
Yeah. So a couple of things. The pro shop part of this, and this is a little embarrassing for me to say this, but it never occurred to me that the reason the pro shop was called the pro shop is historically it was the pro's shop. And so that was a way the pro could make money through the shop. And that's, I think, changing some in some places, but there are still a few places where the pro actually owns the shop, right? And how does that fit into the mix of the job and the structure?
Well, again, you know, I'll put myself in the shoes. Let's say the three of us, you know, bought a club and we're sitting around a table together and we're thinking about hiring a head professional. Is the highest and best use of the professional's time folding shirts, making sure that, you know, the magnets are cool looking? and it needs to look good, right? But like, I think we would probably argue that I want my guy to be the face of the operation. I want him meeting with every prospective member. I want him running great tournaments, right? The pro shop is not as high a priority relative to the other things that pros do. Yet many clubs will create financial incentives either through golf shop ownership or bonus programs and tie a bunch of money to the pro shop. Again, that to me doesn't make any sense because you're asking them to do something that is just a small piece or low on the priority list of what they really should be doing. So, I mean, I own the shop at Cricket, so I'm fortunate, but I'm being dead honest when I say this, I don't spend a ton of time on it. I use it as an opportunity to train the staff. They're all really involved in it. I use it as an opportunity to let them earn more money. You know, it lets me attract better staff. But I just don't, I think that having a nice shop and being able to buy golf clubs at your club and being able to, you know, send the logo out, all those things are important, but not relative to some of the other things that pros time should be spent on.
Can I tell you something? I'm so glad to hear you say these things. Like this to me makes total sense. And this is my big gripe with the golf pro industry, the country club pro industry, is exactly what you're talking about. They're just pulled in too many directions, and then they're doing everything in a mediocre way. And you know, I don't know if the pros have a self-awareness of that or not, but I've seen a lot of different models, but just the salary and bonus, well paid, accepting that it requires a certain level of pay to dedicate your life to do the job that you do, and then let the golfer experience be as good as possible. It's great. I think one other thing that is stimulated for me when I think about what you're saying is in each of these clubs, there's this dynamic between the general manager of the club and the golf professional who's running the golf operations. It sounds like at Philly Cricket, are you both of those? Like at Quaker Ridge, we have absolutely a head of the country club, and he runs everything, and he's a terrific manager, food, beverage, and so forth. And then there's the golf pro. But like, is that embodied in the same person in you?
I don't really think Mario's that good, do you?
Yeah, no, Mario.
I love that guy.
Yeah, no, Mario's the man, but Mario's not the guy you're going to. You're not going to Mario when like your French toast was too soggy. You know, not that I would ever go to anyone on that issue.
Well, I'll tell you this. So I was fortunate prior to being in the structure that we're in now. I was fortunate to work for two really, really good GM COOs. I worked for a guy named Nick Smith, who left Cricket and went down to Austin Country Club, and Tim Musil, who is now the GM COO at Olympic. Both of those guys' philosophy as it related to me was, you're the golf expert. I got enough on my plate. Keep me informed, and no news is good news. Basically, if I'm not hearing anything coming out of golf, it means either everything's great or you're taking care of the problems, and just don't let me get surprised. So I was very lucky to work for guys who acknowledged, you know, my expertise and didn't necessarily try to insert, you know, their expertise into mine. So not every situation's like that. Now, Tim, prior to coming to Cricket, I was the GM and director of golf at a club for 10 years. So when I came here, you made a great point, which was when I was at my last club, I felt like I couldn't be a 10 at anything because I had to be a 7 at everything, right? And I was getting pulled in all these different directions. One of the reasons why I took the Cricket job was I got to focus on golf. And when Tim announced he was leaving, the club asked me, they didn't want to do a GM search because it was right before the golf season was starting. So basically what happened was they asked me to do the interim role. I knew I couldn't handle that and golf by myself. So I pulled in two of my counterparts, Dan Mearsman, who's our director of grounds, Linda Cozy, who's our CFO, who are both rock stars. And the three of us have basically worked collaboratively as what we call an employee executive committee, not unlike an executive committee at a club. And then we created what's called a senior council, which is six of our senior managers. So basically the nine of us met weekly and we collaboratively made decisions to run the club. We did that all through 2018. And when we got to I hope I'm not boring you with this, but it's really interesting in terms of structure at country clubs, because when we got to the end of 18, the club basically said, this is working pretty good. Like, what are your thoughts? And we jumped at it to stay in this structure. And the main reason why we did it was because, you know, generally at country clubs, the GM, the director of golf, the director of grounds, you know, the chef, you know, there's generally, you know, 5 to 10 pretty well paying positions. And then everybody else is sort of mediocre to below mediocre. And the fact of the matter is that the experience at a country club is less about me and it's more about the guys outside or our bartender or the locker room guy. They're the ones that deliver the experience. So the reason why we maintained this structure and didn't go back out and hire a GOO and CM, a GM, was because we basically took 80% of what had been allocated to the GM and AGM positions, and we plowed it back into our middle managers and our frontline staff. And we basically said, yeah, we're going to do more work. And, you know, by industry standards, maybe we're not making what, you know, somebody in a similar role would be. But we all acknowledge that if we can upgrade the frontline positions and middle manager positions, and that the club, you know, becomes more successful because the experience is better, we'll benefit long term. And that's something our leaders have totally supported for the last 4 years and continue to support. And it's allowed us to basically raise the level of quality and life of everybody else at the club, which is, I want our dishwasher at the cricket club to have the best dishwasher position in Philadelphia. I want that guy to be able to put food on his family's table, save for college. And I don't want to look at a dishwasher and go, well, that's a throwaway position. We'll just trade it out every 30 days and we'll pay $12 an hour. That's the wrong way to look at it. And our leadership has been 100% behind it. And, you know, hopefully, you know, Jimmy and his friends and people that come here, hopefully they've seen the benefits of that philosophy change.
Yeah. So I love the course. I love Tellinghouse courses. And I think that Wissahickon course is world-class, top 100 in my mind. And I think I have a little experience to opine or offer an opinion on that. But what really got me at Philly Cricket Club was the experience of being at the club. And I told Jeff, I said, the every aspect of this, the membership, the staff, the interaction, it's a really warm family. Mm-hmm. And there are a few places as I travel around where you have that experience, and you got some people may disagree with me. It's sort of my opinion, but there are some deans in your profession, in your role. And every club I go to, I try to interact with everybody from, you know, if there's a security guard, the person at the backdrop, the locker room attendant, the wait staff, to get a really good feel for it. But there are some guys I thought in your role that are like the deans. One just retired, Bob Ford. Yep. You know, people like you, Bob, Dennis Satishore down at Kays Valley. I met you all on the tee box outside interacting, and it just sets the whole tone for the nature of the club, to where everybody becomes interactive as opposed to just functional. And it's that interacting as opposed to just functional, I think that enriches the experience of being at a club, because it should be the whole experience from the time you get there to the time you drive off in your car, not just from the first tee to the 18th tee, but the entire experience. And that's what I really loved about cricket. I didn't even explore any other clubs in the Philadelphia area after cricket. I tell people, when I go to a restaurant, once I find something on the menu that I like, I don't even look at the rest of the menu, because when you see it, you know it when you see it. And I knew it when I saw it at Philly Cricket Club.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I would tell you, first of all, you know, if I could be half as good as Bob Ford or Dennis Satterthwaite or Mike Harmon or any of these guys, I will be successful, because those guys are just on a totally different level and they're rock stars. And there's a lot of really good golf professionals out there. You know, I'm lucky to work at a club that's a little bit bigger, a little more well known. But there's a ton of guys that do a better job than me that are working at clubs that maybe are a little more anonymous. But, you know, guys who understand what you just brought up, who understand that it's more than just a great golf course. I will share, both of you guys have played Pine Valley, I'm sure, several times, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I don't know if you know Charlie Rowdenbush at all.
Yes, I met Charlie when I was there. I sat down and had a chat with Charlie.
So this is what I would tell you. So everybody that goes to Pine Valley who's not been there before, it's probably the highlight of their golfing career. Like, they are literally expecting a perfect experience, right? And as good as the golf course is, it would not be Pine Valley unless the people at Pine Valley made it feel like Pine Valley. They are the most underrated operation in America, because every person goes there with the highest of high expectations, and almost everybody leaves with them having been met, which is incredibly difficult to do. But they get that Pine Valley, without somebody to greet you when you pull your car in and somebody to sell you a shirt in the shop and warmly say, hey, I hope you had a great day. And without those people, if all you did was just show up there and play golf, to me, I would rather play a mediocre golf course where the feeling is awesome than a great golf course where I don't feel right. And there's some clubs that I've played where that's happened.
I mean, I'll tell you, I really like, I've said it on this podcast before, a hoopy match club. But the experience is like the whole thing. It's like so crazy. But we're going to chat about golf courses next. But I wanted to ask you, just back to the compensation question and sort of the flattening of the curve of the income among the employees and getting more of the budget into the hands so that you can hire the best. I am so confused about tipping at a golf course. Okay.
Yeah.
Who do you tip? Who gets tipped? Like, and what, when you tip them and how much you tip? I know the caddy's easy. Locker room attendant is sort of obvious.
Yeah.
I mean, the starter, though, I don't know. Where else does it go?
It's tricky. I mean, some clubs are non-tipping, some aren't. Some say they're not tipping, but tipping occurs. We're a non-tipping club at cricket. I'm a fan. If I was a member of the club, what I would prefer, I wouldn't want to feel like every time I show up at a private club, I need to take money out of my pocket because I'm there all the time. But what I'd rather do is at the end of the year, I'd rather give the head pro or maybe whatever the fund might be, I'd rather give them $500 and say, could you make sure this gets split up amongst everybody as like a holiday gift, as opposed to feeling like every time I show up, I got to give them $5. Because there's an argument to be made that some clubs that require that, you essentially, like, you get better service the better you tip, which is problematic.
What about the guests? Cause I'm not as concerned when I'm the member, cause you're getting a monthly bill and you're paying money there. But what about as the guest?
If I'm somewhere, I'm tipping everybody. I'm not over tipping, but, you know, like to Jimmy's point, If I go to Quaker Ridge, I'll just use Quaker Ridge as an example, right? I want to make sure that the locker room guy and Mario and everybody I run across after I leave, they're like, man, Jim Smith and that group, what great guys. And that's not necessarily.
The head pro too?
I wouldn't give Mario, you know, but you know what I would do is I would tip like the caddy master. I would tip, obviously, my caddy. I tip the locker room attendant. I'd give a good tip to the food and beverage team if I happen to be eating there. And then, you know, what I do is every time I play somewhere else, I send a dozen cupcakes to the professional staff head pro with a thank you. Because I want them to really, I mean, I appreciate what they do for me. But I represent the cricket club. So their perception of me is going to be their perception of the club. So I have to, you know, make sure. And frankly, I want to be somebody who people say nice things about. That's not, I mean, why wouldn't I?
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of treating people the right way and,
yeah,
you know, being, being generous with tips.
So let's get back to golf courses. What are some of your favorite courses and what makes them favorite courses to you? Because, you know, as a golf professional, when you go to a course, of course, you're going there to play golf, but it's a, as you were just saying, it's a broader experience for you. What are some of your favorite courses from a golfing standpoint?
So I usually answer this question. So I'll oftentimes ask it of, you know, when I run across a guest, I'll say, if you had one round left to play, where would you want to play it? Right. So when I think about in that context, I would put Cypress Point on one side of the coin and Old Head on the other. Most people are surprised by Old Head. We all can agree that that everything about Cypress is ridiculous. You could argue that the golf course at Old Head may not be the world's best golf course, but I'm not sure you could put a golf course in a more spectacular location and the beauty of it. So those two would be one A and one B. Beyond that, you know, we've all gotten, you know, I haven't gotten to play as many nice places as you. but for me, the sort of acid test is after I play, like, do I want to go back and play it again as soon as possible? And do I remember everything about the experience?
Yeah.
So a couple of the places that I've gone over the years that I'm massively, Casa de Campo, Teeth of the Dog.
Robert Birtle. You know, Robert, the director of golf there. Great guy.
It's great. I probably played, I'm not kidding when I tell you, I've probably played Teeth of the Dog 100 times.
Love the
wow.
I love it. I mean, I think it's one of Dye's best. A lot of people have different opinions on it, but yep. I just love the routing of it and the variety on the holes. It's
Yep. I love, you know, the old classic courses, right? So you think about places like Shinnecock, Oakmont, LA Country Club, Chicago Golf, all of those places are beyond special. And then I'm actually a sucker for, I like a challenging golf course. Even I might like if I could shoot 80 or 82 on a golf course and still love it, that to me tells you it's a great place. So places that like that would be like Kiowa Ocean Course.
Yep.
The Pines, I'm not sure I've ever broken 80 on.
How about Pikewood?
I've never played Pikewood.
Oh, you got to go. We'll go. We'll go. You'll love it.
I'll come with you guys.
And you won't break 80.
But you know what? It goes back to, for me, it's more about who I'm playing with than where I'm playing. Yeah. I wouldn't, if somebody said, hey, Jim, you could go, like, so for example, I haven't played Fisher's Island yet. Okay. And if I had an opportunity to go up to play Fisher's Island by myself, I wouldn't take it.
Yeah.
Because I'm more interested in sharing the experience with other people than I am having the experience myself. And that goes back. So I've gotten to play Cypress probably, I don't know, maybe a dozen times. Mm-hmm. And I've probably taken 20 to 30 different people to play there. And one of my favorite experiences in golf, having played it, and you guys have played it, right? Yeah. Is to get in front of them and look back at their eyes when they walk from 14 green to 15 tee.
Right.
And from 15 green to 16 tee. To see the look on their faces makes the entire experience worthwhile. To know that I helped them have that experience, that's why I do what I do.
Yeah, that's the place to take photographs of people too, if you want to capture their feeling of what it's like, because you see the expression during that walk.
Cypress is by far my number one, and I always think it's funny when golf geeks say it's like, oh, some people will be like, it's overrated, when people say that, I a little bit throw up in my mouth and I'm like, that's the craziest thing. And then they go, oh, well, you know, I don't really like 18. And you're like, you know, I'm not really allowed to swear on this podcast, but I would probably swear at them at that moment. I mean, this Cypress is perfect. Cypress is perfect. And I know exactly what you mean. I'm actually trying right now to line up Cypress for my father-in-law's 80th birthday. And I've played it a bunch of times, but I know that's the present I want to give him for his 80th birthday. And it's a little harder to do because of COVID and planning and things like that. We're still in this odd COVID-y world.
My cousins, one of my cousins, my cousin's husband's a big, big golfer. He's a member of multiple clubs. And we surprised him for his 50th by, I flew out there and arranged Cypress with him and two of his buddies, one of whom was sick at the time. And again, like, just so cool to do that. By the way, the thing I like about Cypress the most, it's the best routing in the world.
It is.
In my opinion.
Yeah. You know, what I like a lot about Cypress is, first, every hole is different. You never feel like you're playing the same hole again. And yep. then every hole can be played, even the par threes, every hole can be played very differently off the tee. You don't yep. just get up to the tee and say, what's the distance, and, you know, pound the driver or pound the club on the par threes based on the distance. You got to think about, how do I want to play this hole? And yep. different days, it's probably different ways. But that's what I also love about Cypress. We seem to have lost Aaron there first. Can you hear us, Aaron?
I can hear you guys. Yeah.
Okay. Good. So, Jim, this has been great. A good opportunity just to talk to you. And I learned a lot about sort of the inner workings of a club, and then the role of the head pro at a club. So thank you very much for taking the time to chat with us this morning. Aaron, any final questions or thoughts for Jim?
No, I look forward to meeting you and hanging out. And this was great. And I think that, you know, pros who tune into this podcast will really enjoy our conversation and will glean stuff. I think the thing you said about, you know, trying to work backwards from the experience from the parking lot is really wise.
I'm super, super lucky to be doing what I'm doing, where I'm doing it. I literally think I'm like the luckiest club pro in America, and I'm doing everything I can not to screw it up, basically. So,
just so I guess the last thing I'll ask you to sort of talk about before we end this, for young guys that are interested in that part of the business, the golf club, the PGM program, what advice would you give them about how to do that and how to go through that process and, you know, make a go at it?
So if you're asking me sort of like if somebody, a young man thinking about golf as a career and maybe right. like looking to go to PGM school, what I would probably tell that person is try to find a job as soon as you can, part-time or otherwise, even if it's in the summer at a golf course, mm-hmm. So that you really get a sense of what it's like to be on the other side and be on the work side as opposed to showing up to play. And if it intrigues you enough, you know, PGM programs are terrific, other than they're fairly specialized. We've actually seen applications in those programs drop a little because people don't necessarily want to decide they're going to be a golf pro when they're a freshman. So there's nothing wrong with going to a school that has a PGM program, maybe not getting into the PGM program immediately and dipping your toe in, as opposed to making that decision when you're a senior in high school, and becoming a golf professional. So it's, you know, it's, listen, the industry, battles, perception issues related to long hours and low pay. And it's been harder and harder over the last 10 years to get people into the business. But that's COVID, frankly, one of the best things about COVID is COVID's changing that, because it's made clubs healthier and more play. And we don't have the number of bodies that want to be in the industry. So we're starting to see compensations rise, especially, you know, for the frontline employees. So it's a great business to be in, and it's got so many benefits. But, you know, like anything else, like you guys paid your dues to get where you are today, and they have to be willing to do that as well.
Well, a couple of my favorite head pros, directors of golf, you and Mario, your stories are sort of similar. So that's a really good route to take, too, is just drive up to a club, talk to a guy.
Yeah.
Let that guy tell you about it, and you end up at a top club one day as the director of golf. I mean, Mario, I think, did something similar to you in terms of how he got to his role. But it's golf is the golf world. And I say this just all the time. Well, first of all, I think our country is just full of really good people. I believe in really, truly the goodness of people. And golf is a place where I see that just multiplied over and over again. And your story is a story that demonstrates that. But it's just really a great group of golf really attracts, despite the image that people have of it and all and so on and so forth about country clubs and people in the club. My experience has been golf. First, our country is filled with great people. And I find a lot of them at golf clubs.
And you know what? Think about it, right? It doesn't matter what your income level is, what your education is, what your intelligence is, where you went to any, we all love the same thing.
Right.
And so it puts us all kind of on a level playing field. So when we're at the club or at a golf course, nobody cares who you are.
Right.
They just want to share love for something that we all love. And that's, to me, that's the beauty of the game.
Yeah, one of my favorite sayings is, it's amazing how quickly differences melt away under the heat of a common passion for golf.
True.
Yeah.
True.
So thank you, Jim. It's been great. Really, really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. Hey, so that was really cool. That was one of those conversations, to be quite honest. When I saw Jim on our calendar this morning, I was not sure exactly what we're going to talk about, but it was a great conversation. And I think I said it during the conversation, but my takeaway as a consumer of golf is exactly what he said, that you got to bifurcate these different roles and kind of have your pro present. I think the pro being present and almost being a pseudo maitre d' and be available and around is really key. And it's frustrating, you know, when these guys get torn into so many different directions and they're giving teaching lessons on the golf course and, you know, there's something getting bollocked up at the first tee and there's no one you can really go to. And I also just find these guys, when you get in front of someone who's a professional golf pro and they've gotten to the level of being a top 100 golf course pro, they're pretty awesome people. They're all pretty awesome. So like to not have them interacting with your guests and so forth, it's frustrating. But anyway, that was cool. Interesting. I can't wait to play Philly Cricket Club with you. What was your big takeaway from that conversation, Jimmy?
I learned a lot about just sort of what it takes to do that job and all the multiple pieces and the things that they're balancing, all the balls that are in the air. And I have to tell you, just from my observations on Jim, is he actually, when you're watching him, it just looks so natural and easy for him. And he's a guy that really likes to mix it up, and he's out there. Literally, the times that I've been there, I could say just sort of anecdotally, but 90% of his time that I've seen him interacting, I've seen him, it's been outside his office. But I also, even when I wasn't a member there and I got introduced to him, he just took the time.
Yeah.
To just talk. And you don't feel like I didn't feel like I was interrupting him or keeping him from something. He wasn't like looking around or looking at his watch, or he was present. And that's one of the amazing things I think about him too, is when I watch him and see him interact, he's present. He's right where he is. And it's a great guy. He's a great guy to have as a COO, director of golf, all those titles that he really enhances the experience at Philly Cricket Club.
That's awesome. Well, I'm glad we had the opportunity to chat with him. And until the next time, I will look forward to the next conversation we have, which I'm sure will be pretty soon.
It's been great. Until next time, Aaron.
Okay. All right. See you, Jimmy.